Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to this, the latest Burr News Facebook Live interview. Joined today by the Premier and Finance Minister, David Burr. Mr. Burr, thank you very much. Premier, I should say, not Mr. Burr. I apologise. Thank you very much for sparing some time. I know you're relatively tight for time, so hopefully we'll get through most of the questions and we'll see how far we get. We were just talking off camera a little bit, and I mentioned that, to me, it seems to have been an exceedingly busy first few months as Premier, both domestically and externally. A lot of legislation has gone through. You've accomplished a heck of a lot. If you could tell me what you think your top three accomplishments are to date, what would you say?
Well, I think that thank you. It's a pleasure to be here as well, and I welcome the opportunity to speak to your watching audience, those here in Bermuda and those around the world. If I want to speak to the top accomplishment, I think the top accomplishment would certainly be the fact that Bermuda is not on the list of non-cooperative jurisdictions for tax purposes by the European Union.
That's obviously one of my questions.
I'm certain at some point in time you'll get to that question, Jeremy, but I think that is important. I think the second thing, I'm not going to pick out a specific item, but what I'm going to say is that the Cabinet has been able to make significant progress on our throne speech initiatives, which we've laid out, and we've been able to put a number of platform items into action. And the third thing I would say is that apart from that, I think that just by what is being taking place in Bermuda, insofar as relationships that we're having not only with the opposition at a meeting and a briefing with the members of the opposition economic team earlier today, but also inside of the community, whether it was last evening I hosted a dinner with reinsurance leaders, meeting with the unions and the relations, trying to make sure that we have a better community approach to issues that we face as a country. And I think that that is something that's important.
That goes under the radar a bit, that kind of thing, doesn't it?
It's soft, but the fact is that in order for us to succeed in Bermuda, we have to be able to work together, and we have to be able to disagree in a fashion that does not damage us internationally.
So you see that kind of communication going on long term?
Yeah, I mean, we're working with it. I mean, and it's something that we have to continue to work on. It's not easy. Politicians, it's difficult sometimes for us to resist the urge and temptation to go straight into political battle. But that much being said, I think the people who elected us want us to address issues in a mature fashion. So when I speak to people, whether it's when I speak to international business leaders where I say no surprises, or when I speak to people in Parliament where I say I want to be known as a no-drama administration, we're just going to do our best to just say, stick to the facts, go with what we're doing, and we're not going to get stuck into engage in the what I call a lot of times petty back and forth.
You mentioned the EU, and obviously it's one of the questions I was going to ask, but I was going to ask it in the context that there seem to be a lot of external threats to Bermuda at the moment. And if you don't mind, I want to go through them one by one.
It's perfectly fine.
So we can deal with them individually so we don't get them confused. And this is, I'm surmising these are external threats, and obviously I'd like your opinion on these. We're seeing, I'll start again, in your predecessor's last budget, Bob Richards, there's a quote where he said, the scenario whereby US corporate taxes are cut to such an extent that there will no longer be a comparative advantage to use the facilities that Bermuda offers is now possible. And that was last February. And of course, since then, we've seen passage through the Congress and the Senate of the tax reform bill, and we've seen the potential for corporate tax to be lowered to around 20%. How big a threat is that now to Bermuda? Because it's becoming reality, or it's close to becoming reality.
Well, it all depends, and it depends on who you ask as the level and scale of a threat. The one thing that I would make clear is that tax reform in the United States has not yet been passed, and the details of which are inside of that bill are not yet known.
But the headline figures seem to be there.
Well, the headline figure is that if you go ahead and if that happens, then certainly there will be some challenge to the way that we operate in Bermuda. But when we speak to the insurance leaders and the reinsurance leaders, of what they've said is that part of the reason for locating Bermuda is not just the tax neutrality that Bermuda offers, but it's also the regulatory regime that we have. And it's easier to transact business across the market in the United States from Bermuda than it is inside of the United States. And so we offer distinct regulatory advantages, and I think we will continue to maintain those regulatory advantages.
You're going to have to maintain those regulatory advantages.
Yes.
I mean, that's going to be crucial for you if that's the deciding factor.
Absolutely. And I think that from that perspective, that's where we're going to continue to be. But we have an excellent working relationship relationship with the Association of Bermuda Insurers and Reinsurers. We've been working with them regarding our lobbying efforts, which are taking place in the U.S. Congress, our public advocacy there, and also we work with them in the EU with issues facing there. So our relationship is strong. Our relationship will continue to be strong, and we will face these challenges together. But Bermuda is more than just a tax benefit. It is a regulatory benefit, and we have a very well advanced market here.
You're obviously not relaxed about the situation, but you seem fairly confident about it. Is that a fair summation?
It's not a question of confidence. We cannot control what the U.S. does with their tax laws.
Oh, clearly,
the only
thing
which we can control is
stuff.
How we do things here in the Bermuda context and making sure that we continue to work together so that Bermuda can be successful in business, and we're going to continue to do that.
You mentioned the lobbying going on there, mm-hmm. and I was going to ask you about that, because I just wonder realistically what is that you can do to try and influence the U.S. authorities. Is the lobbying part very important?
Well, it is. I think that it's a question of when you talk about what happens in the Gulf states, particularly Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, and Florida, and even South Carolina and North Carolina, states which have a high exposure to hurricanes. When you're speaking about what basically the U.S. Congress are looking to do, which is to put in place what we've called a hurricane tax, it means that it will increase the price of that insurance. And if you speak to representatives who represent those particular states, they're very concerned because insurance coverage is very difficult to get for those states, and it will be more difficult for them, and it will drive up the cost. So what you will find is that less the people inside of those states will be able to have insurance coverage, and that means that the states will then have to take on that risk or that rebuilding should whatever happens in Congress take place. So clearly there are people that are concerned, and we just have to make sure, in the same way that we do in the European Union, to educate lawmakers in the United States what the repercussions of their actions are.
So a lot of lobbying effort has gone into that area, has it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and it's important. It's stuff that we've done for a very long time. But what I told there was an ABIR board meeting yesterday, and I thanked ABIR for their work, because the government of Bermuda has not had an actual lobbying effort in Bermuda this entire year.
In
Washington, D.C.,
In
Washington, D.C., and we did not have an official lobbying presence until November, and I actually think that that's an abdication of responsibility, completely honest.
Was that why you had the three-month contract for the lobbying firm?
Well, we had a three-month contract because a contract that's going to be over the size of $100,000, the financial instructions required to go out to tender.
You mentioned it's good to get clarification on that, and hopefully that's been useful for the viewers as well. Now, the other thing, of course, and you touched on it already, we've touched on it, is the EU. A couple of weeks ago, they issued a statement. I'm not going to read it all because it's way too long. I don't think anybody would understand it.
Well, it's all a question. The EU issued a statement, so was that the European Council or was that the European Commission? Because it all depends. There are so many different parts of the EU.
It was the ECNHR or something. I can't remember. But it was Section 2, Fair Taxation, Section 2.2, existence of tax regimes that facilitate offshore structures which attract profits without real economic activity. Mm-hmm. The following jurisdictions are committed to addressing the concerns relating to economic substance by 2018, and of course Bermuda's there. Now, and then after that, I think we had the Fiscal Responsibility Panel, the three wise men, if you like, and they came out and said, I know you don't like this phrase, but I'm quoting them, not me. Bermuda has been greylisted, and government has been given a year to do something about companies here without any substantive presence. What's your interpretation?
Well, I'm curious as to that quote, because the Fiscal Responsibility Panel's report has not yet been released.
This is an interim report, I think.
Well,
I
no, there has been no report that has been released by the Fiscal Responsibility Panel, so I just want to clarify that particular instance. I think the Fiscal Responsibility Panel's report will be released
it's
next
imminent,
week.
Yeah.
And as we know, that there are various organizations which are not always very accurate in their reporting, so I don't think that we should rely on what they say. The Fiscal Responsibility Panel will have their report, and when it comes out, we can judge it from there. But going back to the basic statement of the European
relating
Union,
to economic substance, that seems to be the crux, the crucial part. What's your interpretation?
I would say that, of course, is something that people want to draw attention to. We take it from the first part of the statement, and it talks about facilitating structures which attract profits inside of a jurisdiction. And what I've said publicly is that Bermuda is one of the leading countries in adopting country-by-country reporting for our multinational enterprises. And so for countries that operate throughout the world, global enterprises, they're required to declare their income and expenses on a country-by-country basis. So if you have have country-by-country reporting, and you are sharing that information automatically with the European Union members who are signed up to this, mm-hmm. some of them who are not signed up to this regime. So we are more advanced than many of the European countries themselves who have signed up to this regime. If you do that, then you minimize the opportunity for profits being in a jurisdiction that do not reflect economic activity there. And so we're going to engage in the dialogue with the European Union to find out what specific additional concerns they may have. But it is our view that, by and large, because we are early adopters of country-by-country reporting, and because we have these items, it basically states that, so they're worried about the erosion of their tax base. That's what they're worried about. But if we are telling them how much money is being made inside of your country, that alleviates those concerns.
I was going to ask you if you had clarification from the EU about this. You've got meetings lined up, presumably, to talk about this?
We have a full schedule of engagement that's going to take place over the next year. We've committed to continue the dialogue with the European Union Code of Conduct Group. But the European Union is a very important partner for Bermuda. And we do lots of business with Europe. Our insurance companies do a lot of business with Europe. And we're going to continue to be an important partner to the European Union. We are not a non-cooperative jurisdiction. We are the definition, and as you've heard me say before, the Bermuda Standard, we are leading the other overseas territories in what it means to be a cooperative jurisdiction, and we're going to continue to assert that leadership.
It's interesting. One of my follow-up questions was going to be about how important the EU is to Bermuda, mm-hmm. and how important the EU stance is to Bermuda. How important is it? I mean, if the EU comes out and says Bermuda is now blacklisted, mm-hmm. what are the net effects going to be?
Well, that's a funny thing. I mean, it was so interesting inside of this entire circumstance is everyone's worried about the countries that were not blacklisted because they wanted them to blacklisted, and not worried about the countries that are. I mean, they have South Korea on a blacklist. I mean, you're talking about a G20, an OECD country that ends up on a blacklist of non-cooperative tax jurisdictions. You have the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, you know, that are on a blacklist. I'm quite certain that the European Union is not going to stop having investment flows from the UAE, nor are they going to ban the import of Samsung phones so they can't have them from South Korea. So I think that the EU is working through their process. This is, by and large, something that has a political dimension to it as well. But as I said, we are going to continue to cooperate with the European Union throughout this point. We're going to, as I said, we had a meeting and briefing with members of the opposition today, so they were all here in this particular room. Next week, we have a meeting with industry representatives to let them know where we stand to alleviate any fears or concerns, and we're going to work through this process in a very deliberate fashion. In the end, we're going to make sure that Bermuda is going to continue to be a strong economy, and we are not going to put ourselves at a competitive disadvantage and sign up for things that other countries have not done themselves.
You were recently in London with the Prime Minister, Theresa May, for a meeting of the UK Overseas Territories, Council of the UK Overseas Territories. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, Downing Street issued a statement, and it's quite lengthy, but I have to read it, so it's in context. The Prime Minister recognised that a lot of work had been done following the Panama Papers last mm-hmm. year. She thanked the territories for the leadership they have already shown, including steps they have already taken to implement international standards, and asked for similar leadership to show what more can be done to make further progress on the issue. I'm kind of interpreting that as in relation to the Paradise Papers. And politically, when you get a statement like that, it can be interpreted as saying, you must do more. Mm-hmm. What was the kind of conversation? What was your interpretation of that? What was the conversation with the Premier surrounding the Paradise Papers?
Well, the only thing
with the Prime Minister.
The only thing that I can say on that particular topic is I think that we were all strong in our assertion that we have done more than the other countries that have criticized us. And that is what the United Kingdom government is, that's position of which the United Kingdom government has to carry. There is a political debate inside of the UK regarding, from, of course, the leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, who wants to bang the hammer and talk about the need for a public register of beneficial ownership. The only real country in the world that has a semi-public register of beneficial ownership is the United Kingdom. What we have told Her Majesty's government is very clear, is that when the OECD and the G20 mandates public registers of beneficial ownership inside of their countries, and it is enforced by the G20, then the Bermuda government will happily accede to the international standard. But until that point in time, we will not.
So there's no more you can do.
When there the is Prime no Minister more says, that we can do. More. Well, I mean, if other countries did as much as Bermuda did, then I think that we would have less of a discussion on these particular points. So we want other people to catch up to where we are before we start acceding to demands to do more.
Just before I come on to the next external threat, when you say that, how can you get that message across? How can you pull everybody up to your standards?
Well, the one thing in which you have to understand, Jeremy, and I think you do understand, is that some people don't want to get the message. Some people, for domestic political concerns, such as the leader of the opposition in the United Kingdom, will continue to bang on about tax havens and dirty money. The fact of the matter is that it is far easier to launder money in the United Kingdom than it is in Bermuda. So he should probably worry about his own backyard more than he should worry about Bermuda.
Have you thought about meeting?
We've had numerous requests and attempts to have meetings with Mr. Corbyn, and he has rejected and denied them at every opportunity. Mm. It is very unfortunate.
Was he given a reason?
Maybe he doesn't want to meet with the leader of a so-called tax haven.
Brexit. Who knows what's happening with Brexit?
Well, there seems to finally be some developments there.
But they seem to be talking points over that final development.
Which is precisely what we're seeing in the US on tax reform.
Very much so. Is there a concern from your point of view that once Brexit does happen, if it ever happens, that Britain will no longer have a seat at the table at the EU and no longer be able to speak on behalf of territories like Bermuda?
Yes, that is a legitimate fear. And that's the reason why we are making sure that we form our own relationships in Brussels, and we're going to have important representation in Brussels. And so one of the things that you've heard me speak about in our throne speech and otherwise is that we need to have permanent representation in the European Union, just like we have permanent representation in Washington, D.C. And over the coming months, we'll be speaking about the actions of which we're going to take in that regard.
You have a physical presence there.
Yeah, but I mean, it's absolutely important to do so. I mean, physical presence takes lots of different forms. The fact is that we are very constrained financially, so we have to be prudent in our operations. But the fact is that we have a very important trading partner in the European Union, and we need to make sure that our relations there can exist after the EU leaves. After the UK leaves the EU.
And lastly, next year, I believe, is an inspection of Bermuda's anti-money laundering regime.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Can you explain what that is about and how that could be construed as a threat? Because there's an issue if you don't pass. Mm-hmm. What happens?
Well, there is without question issue if you don't pass, then we're in a bad state. But it's not a pass-fail, it's an overall inspection of our regime.
The way I heard it was you have 10 areas, but if you fail one, you fail all.
Exactly. What I can tell you is that the government has been working feverishly in consultation with the private sector as well to make sure that we are at a standard where we will continue to have an excellent regulatory structure, and people will look at Bermuda's system and say that they are not a place, they have protections in place to prevent money laundering. And I think that we certainly have done so. It is incredibly bothersome for citizens. It's incredibly bothersome to have to fill out these number of forms that the banks require and otherwise. But part of that is when you talk about looking to the future, looking to technology, looking to how we can do these things more efficiently. And during all of this at the same time, the government is talking about how we can support companies that are looking to make this process more efficient so that Bermuda can be a leader in not only global compliance, but also the technology that surrounds global compliance to make it easier for compliance to happen and more efficient for those things to take place. So it'll be a lot easier that instead of filling out all these multiple forms at every single bank, you fill out one form, it's held in a single repository, and it can be shared automatically. Those are the type of things in which we're looking at from a technological basis. And though there are companies in Bermuda that do this, there are companies otherwise that are looking to set up to do those type of things. And those are the type of things that we are supporting via the BDA.
I know a few people who will be listening to this will be music to their ears. Okay. I've seen
a few people. I think all of us want to get to a point where we only have to fill out these forms once as opposed to every year and multiple times.
The inspection next year, is this one of the reasons why betting shops, the regulation of betting shops was passed to the Gaming Commission?
Well, regulation of betting shops is something that the former government wanted to give to the Gaming Commission, and the Gaming Commission actually told them no.
Just Do you know why?
I have no idea why. But
because I know they have got.
But what I can tell you is that now they must follow the directions of the minister responsible, and they will be getting betting shops. And betting shops needs to be make sure they are being regulated, and we need a structure in order to do that.
Is this part of the because of the inspection?
Absolutely. I think that we need to cover all areas where there's any possibility of money laundering. And that's to say in everything. I mean, there's possibility of money laundering throughout the country. That's just something that exists all the time.
Is it a perfect storm for Bermuda, brewing on the horizon?
I don't know if it's a perfect storm for Bermuda. I think that Bermuda is well positioned in a lot of particular areas. Our insurance industry is well regarded. We still have a very good international reputation. We have opportunities to advance here. Our platform is something that people like, and it's a good place. And you know, you can see, it's an absolutely beautiful country. So it's a place where we want people to live and to work. What we have to, as a people, recognize is that in order to have economic growth, we need to make sure that we have more people living and working in Bermuda.
It's one thing I want to touch on later on, actually. At the end of the day, though, you know, you talk about Jeremy Corbyn and the leader of the Labour Party. It's not inconceivable that he could be in power the next election.
No, not at all.
And for people like him, Bermuda is very politically expendable, isn't it?
Well, it can be politically expendable as much as he likes. Unfortunately for Jeremy Corbyn, the law matters. And as much as he believes that he can legislate our laws from the United Kingdom, it is not possible for them to pass orders in council without our consent. We have a legal ruling that supports that, and so Mr. Corbyn can continue his grandstanding. I mean, I would love to sit down and talk with the leader of the Labour Party as a fellow leader of the Labour Party here, and hopefully we'll have that opportunity next year.
I use that as an example, but I mean, it could equally apply to the US authorities. Bermuda is very expendable if it benefits the U.S. They're not going to blink an eyelid over Bermuda, are they?
I would say no, but the thing is that there always are repercussions which exist. So just like when we're talking about taxes, and just like we're talking about the fact that people may end up losing their insurance coverage or have their insurance coverage go up, there's consequences to every type of particular action. So I think that our job is to make sure we educate people on the value proposition of Bermuda, the role of which we play in the global economy, and the good partner of which we have always been to the United States, the United Kingdom, and the partner that we will continue to be to the United States, the United Kingdom.
We kind of come full circle to the beginning, but I don't want to dwell on it because thousands of words have been spoken and written about this, but I do want to talk about the Paradise Papers very quickly.
No problem.
Do you see a long-term reputational issue for Bermuda out of that? The reason I ask that is because I was reading the paper yesterday, one of the UK papers yesterday, the day before. It was a Guardian, of course.
Of course it was a Guardian.
But they didn't reference the Paradise Papers, but it talked about the World Inequality Report, and that showed the richest 0.1% of the world's population have increased their combined wealth by as much as the poorest 50% in the world. Mm-hmm. It did reference the Paradise Papers, of course. Now, you can talk as much as you like about how well-regulated it is, et cetera, but that is what people hear, isn't it?
Well, it's fine that people hear that, Jeremy, but here's the fact. There is nothing that Bermuda can do to change its laws that will fix that problem. Those are the facts. That problem is something we can fix that problem here, but if we're talking on a global level, there's an issue. When you talk about reputation from the Paradise Papers, I think our reputation was enhanced because the fact is that unlike other releases and leaks, there was no illegal activity that was found.
Absolutely.
And so from that perspective, it shows that we do regulate our affairs very well. And in that context, the simple message that I give to persons when I meet is that it is not for Bermuda to change their laws. It is for the United Kingdom or other home countries to change their laws. If they don't like the activity of which they're seeing, then they are perfectly happy to make changes in their laws to basically, if they want, to tax their citizens more than they do currently.
I'm talking about perceptions. When I say that's what people hear, I'm talking about perceptions, and that builds a groundswell.
And here's the thing. You're never going to change perception when you are a country that has a different type of taxation than others. And politically, people will continue to bang on about it. But what we have to understand is that's the Guardian. Another newspaper may take a different position. So at the same point in time when you have Jeremy Corbyn who will say something, you'll also have other politicians who will say other things.
The Telegraph wasn't particularly complimentary.
I understand. But what I'm saying is that there is a balance of items. So you have to understand that although someone may be the loudest voice in the room, that doesn't mean that they're the only voice in the room.
Debt is an ever-present issue. You were speaking in the House earlier this month, and He said it was estimated the public debt net of sinking fund will be about 2.48 billion.
A billion
would be nice, wouldn't it? And then, of course, that was followed up by the Auditor General, who came out and said Bermuda's debt was actually 3.7 billion.
What's the difference between the two?
What is the debt?
The debt, as per the accounting standards of the Constitution of this country, our net debt will stand at $2.48 billion.
So where did the Auditor General get
the Auditor General always uses a different type of calculation for her debt figures. But what I can say is that the debt figure, which is accorded to the debt from our definition side of our Constitution, is just shy of $2.5 billion.
So how does the Auditor General, and I can't ask the Auditor General this, unfortunately.
I think that you should. That's probably better.
Do you have an idea of where?
I do know the answer. I don't know it off the top of my head. I think it has to deal with, I think that maybe she takes into account underfunding of pensions or something. I'm not entirely
sure. I was going to ask if pensions were included.
She takes other things into account that are not done from the pure accounting standard.
Well, hopefully we'll get an interview with the Auditor General if she's listening. We'll do that.
I think you should.
Of course, she does go on to say, I believe that the government needs to take concerted action to address this fiscal challenge. Now, I don't want to sound disrespectful to the Auditor General. That's a statement of the obvious. But can you outline the steps you're doing?
I mean, that's the same statement that Auditor Generals have been making for a number of years. And from that perspective, what we're doing, and the most important thing of which we can do, is to make sure that we return our economy to a path of growth. That is the only thing that we can do. It is about growing. So yes, we'll be certainly more efficient inside of the government. Yes, we'll be more efficient inside the civil service. We said of what we're going to do insofar as doing our best to hold spending at current levels while we get revenues up. The best way to do that is by creating growth in this economy, more opportunity, and more jobs in Bermuda for Bermudians. However,
doesn't happen overnight, though.
Absolutely,
that's a long-term project.
It's a long-term project, but I mean, I think that there are certain things that you can see that can certainly benefit that. The long-term issue is when we're talking about debt, what we have to do is we have to get ourselves to a balanced budget. That's the key. That's the first target. So we want to talk about debt. The first target is to get to a balanced budget. When I deliver the budget statement, or when this government delivers this budget statement in 2019, we expect to deliver a budget statement that will say that the budget will be balanced for that fiscal year. This year, when we go, we are expecting that we will not see any increase in our net debt. We're expecting that the borrowing that will happen will only be to cover our contribution to the sinking fund, and that means that there will actually be no actual increase in net debt. So basically our debt, the expectation is in this budget year, we'll be able to say that we are no longer increasing debt, and once we get to a balanced budget position, then we can actually start reducing our debt.
A couple of things from that, and I know you're not too keen talking about the three wise men, as I call them, but they did talk about some budget slippage.
Oh, absolutely. There has been budget slippage.
There has, right? So is it like, I mean, there was an idea that it was hoped you'd balance the budget by 2018-19. Now they're saying 2019-20. Is that likely to be the case?
I can assure you that that is every expectation of this government that when we deliver our budget statement in February 2019, that we will project a balanced budget. That much I can assure you, and that is the specific expectation of this
government. That'll be for the 2019-20 fiscal year.
Yes, in 2019.
So there won't be a balanced budget
Not when we go to Parliament in February. And that's just not going to happen. But I think from the perspective of what the Fiscal Responsibility Panel said, and this is important, they said that the projections which were made by the former government have not been met. And clearly they haven't been met. The question is why, Jeremy?
Well,
and that is because we have not had the economic growth which we need to have in order to grow the economy and to grow revenues. That's the challenge. The challenge of which we have is to grow the economy. That is our number one focus. And I think that is the context of which that needs to be looked at.
Is that referring to they refer to slippage? Is that what you were talking
Absolutely.
About?
Absolutely. That's where it is. I mean, but I spoke about the slippage when I gave my budget reply last year in Parliament, because there were projections which were made by the former Minister of Finance, and those projections were not met. And that is the slippage of which they're talking about, and that's the slippage of which we're referencing.
Understood. Do you know what caused that? Do you know what the underlying causes were?
I just stated the economy did not grow
it was literally
as much
as
it
was.
Yes.
So there was no question of overspending here
there was a little bit of overspending, and maybe your revenues come in less than you expect, all the rest, but the baseline reason is...
So the forecast growth wasn't as big as it was.
Precisely. We have not had enough growth inside of our economy. The thing is that if we had 2,000 more jobs in our economy now than we do,
clearly,
the conversation changes. So that's our target. That's what we're looking at, and that's where we're focused.
That's something I want to touch on later on.
But I want later to, on?
Hopefully we'll have time later on. I'm not talking about all afternoon. But I'm being careful. I want to go through this step by step, okay. I think, because it's such a complicated subject.
And just so you're aware, Jeremy, I'm just saying that when it comes budget time, I'll be more than happy to discuss the budget with you at length in case you want to move on to other issues. Because I'm not going to lay out the budget. I mean, if
no,
I could,
the budget, but there are certain things.
We are returning to an open budget process again.
Right.
So we will be publishing our pre-budget report next week, which will lay out all the challenges which we're facing and the decisions of which the Ministry of Finance is looking at doing in order to consider putting together the final budget.
I'm just really looking at the things already in public domain, and one of those is line of credit. With Butterfield Bank. Mm-hmm. Can you just expand on that? What's that about?
That's, as I said, that's just short-term borrowing that's needed to meet our obligations.
So you are, because you weren't, as I understood it, you weren't sure if you would draw on that.
It will be drawn on, but we're not taking 135 at once. Mm-hmm. We only take what is needed.
And how do you anticipate using all of it?
We anticipate using it shortly. Yes, absolutely. Okay. I don't know if we anticipate using all of it. That was the figure that was projected. Mm. Revenues are tracking a little bit higher than they were expected. We do know that we've had some unanticipated expenses, which were related to the America's Cup and others, which we inherited. So we'll see where we stand.
Okay, moving on now, something completely different. One of the things that's been in the headlines over and over and over again is the same-sex marriage issue. There's been lots of debate. We don't have to go back into the ins and outs of it. But I am kind of intrigued by a couple of statements that are being made, one by the Human Rights Commission early this week. Bermuda gained the shameful honour of being the first jurisdiction to allow marriage equality and then remove and replace it with legislation that is aimed clearly at being separate and unequal. Do you see it as shameful?
What I see it is the fact that this is a government that will make the difficult decisions and will lead when it's necessary and required. The former government abdicated its responsibility. The former government dithered on this issue on numerous occasions. We are going to take the bull by the horns so that we can put this issue behind us and we can focus on the issues that matter more to a wider section of this country, and that is jobs and economic growth. It is very important that the economy, that the government is focused on those particular issues. In relation to this, the issue of same-sex relationships, same-sex couples, after the passage of the Mexican Partnership Act, enjoy more legal benefits than they previously had. That is something that is being missed in the hysterics of which is coming through in the international media and those persons who want to find a way to attack the Progressive Labor Party government. What happened previously, before, is that, for instance, same-sex couples did not have rights to pensions, did not have rights to survivorship benefits, hospital visitation, health insurance rights, prior to the passage of the Domestic Partnership Act. They now have those benefits, which they did not previously have. We believe that that is an improvement in the position of where we had, and we recognize that this is a compromise that both sides do not like. But that's what happens sometimes when you compromise.
The Human Rights Commission went on to say we must stem the attack and erosion of human rights that has been pervasive over the past 2 years of our tenure. Do you see there's been an erosion of human rights when it comes to same-sex marriage?
No, I don't.
No?
Nope.
For the reasons stated about giving more rights.
What I'm saying is I don't agree with that perspective, and what we can understand is that different people may have different opinions on this, but the fact is, under the laws of which Bermuda is ascribed to, same-sex marriage is not a human right under the European Convention of Human Rights. It is not. They have said that. That is the fact. So people can have their own opinions. People can say what they like to say. We like to deal in the place of reality. And the place of reality is that after the passage of the Domestic Partnerships Act, same-sex couples have more legal benefits than they previously enjoyed.
This was a compromise bill, wasn't it, really?
Absolutely. No clearer compromise that can be seen than the minister who led it.
Because I would assume the risk of this not being passed would be to revert back to Mr. Furbert's.
There's many different risks, but the fact is that what we had, and I think that it's important to understand, though the judge said that same-sex couples were entitled to marry, the judge cannot give same-sex couples legal benefits. That is something that has to be done by Parliament. And just to be clear, I think it should be clear from the, what we saw in Parliament is that there is no appetite in Parliament for that. So what we have to do is that we have to figure out what it is that we can get a consensus to pass into law and to move forward on that. That is a place where the former government failed. They failed to build consensus. They failed to engage broadly on this issue. We engaged broadly on this issue. We got consensus and we moved this matter forward. So now that this matter has been dealt with, we can now focus on other issues such as education reform, reduce the cost of living, and in growing our economy and creating more jobs for Bermudians.
Lots of speculation about it now going to the governor, whether the governor will give it consent. Mm-hmm. Are you concerned about that at all?
I expect that the governor will ratify the will of the parliament.
How do you think history will remember this debate?
Well, I think that history will remember it by a government that chose to be courageous in leading when other governments had failed. The fact is, governing is not easy. If there's one thing that I've learned over the last 5 months, it's not easy. And quite often, you have to make the best choice out of two bad decisions. In this particular instance, we came together as a cabinet. We discussed this issue, very lengthy debates inside of our caucus, and we arrived at a position where, in the very divergent views of the Progressive Labour Party caucus, we came to a position and a compromise position and saying, this is what we're going to support going forward. And quite frankly, I think that we should be applauded for that.
One of the other major things that's happened recently is the Cost of Living Commission, mm-hmm. what used to be called, I believe, the Price Commission.
Yes.
When I was researching this yesterday, I accidentally came across something, a Bernie story from July 2011.
Okay.
From Paula Cox.
Absolutely.
Who said at the time in a statement to the House, accordingly, government will use the powers of inquiry available under the Price Commission Act mm-hmm. to obtain information from food importers about their import costs, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. Talked about obtaining relevant economic data, mm-hmm. engaging interest groups, and then number seven, producing a report for the minister recommending how government can assist in ensuring that consumers can get the most reasonable price for essential goods and services.
Correct.
What happened to that report? Have you
idea? I don't believe that that report was ever published, to be honest.
Was it done?
I do not believe it was. I don't believe it was. I know there were interim reports that I've seen, but those interim reports were very thin, and they spoke to future steps of which could be taken. And what I think is also important is to understand and to recognize that the Price Control Commission did not meet during the entirety tenure of the One Bermuda Alliance government. I don't even think they were even appointed. And so from that perspective, we recognize that there are places inside of law where there are things in place which will allow the power of inquiry to be used, and we're going to do that. And it's a broad cross-section. We talk about food, but there's also the cost of healthcare, cost of medicines, and different items. So as I told the Parliament, the person who's going to be leading this for us is going to be Senator Anthony Richardson.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the Price Commission before, mm-hmm. and we're confident that we're going to be able to have that broad cross-section, have that discussion, and talk about this issue, which is the most important issue to the residents of this country. The cost of living and the cost of doing business is what is killing and crushing us, and we have to find a way to improve that.
Okay, so what do you want to accomplish? I mean, you're talking broad strokes. Is there anything more specific you'd like to see coming from this?
Absolutely. Well, I can tell you what the specific result is. A reduction in the cost of living in Bermuda.
But it's a question of how you get from A to B.
Absolutely. I'm not going to prejudge the work of the Cost of Living Commission. What I am going to say is that I believe there are places inside of our local economy where we can be more efficient, which can deliver lower prices for goods, lower prices for consumers.
Can you be more specific? Can you expand on that?
Health insurance is one. I think when we're talking about food importers and food production, I think there's food importers, production, and sale. I think there's places where we can be more efficient there to pass on savings towards consumers.
What would your idea of efficiency be?
Our idea of efficiency is possibly, in some cases, cutting out middlemen. Cutting out middlemen, in some cases.
Which would risk unemployment, perhaps.
In the broad sense, someone would say it would risk unemployment. But if you
Short
look
term.
At, but if you exactly, but if you look at an economy as a whole, if you have a reduction of the cost of living, which means that the cost of doing business is less inside the country, that means that it allows other people to spend money in other areas in the economy, and you create additional growth in other places.
Who do you regard as a middleman?
I can speak in food importers. It would be food importers, the transportation, different things, all the rest. There's lots of different ways, but I think that we should look and study this in its entirety. We should not look to prejudge, but I think that there are places where you can be more efficient. I mean, another issue is when we talk about healthcare and prescription medicines, which are extraordinarily expensive. I think that I was at I was in London at the student reception, and the lady was talking about her asthma medicine is like a pound in the UK and 50-something dollars here. There surely has to be a reason why that's the case.
Right, in the UK, they are pumping extra billions of pounds a year.
That's perfectly fine. But what I'm saying is, surely there's a way to find out why is that so different, and how can we get a better deal for the consumer here locally?
In the UK, the taxpayer is paying for it.
Billions of pounds extra. That much may be the case, but I think there's also space and scope to recognize that in certain places as well, the taxpayers may not pay for it, but we may be paying an extraordinary amount, and we would want to pay less.
Just going back to the middleman thing, mm-hmm. I can kind of see that the larger businesses here will have the economies of scale, they'll have the infrastructure set up, where they might not have to have a middleman, but a small businessman needs a middleman.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Jeremy. It's 2017. The world is changing. The pace of logistics are changing. Distributed ledger technology and the blockchain can make things more efficient insofar as supply chain management and otherwise. And we can look to how those efficiencies can actually drill down to the consumer. And that is where this government is focused. I feel very sorry for the people who work in IT inside of the government of Bermuda, because they have a leader who understands information technology very clearly. And so when they come and say, oh, well, this is something that might take a while and all the rest, I say, I know exactly how long it should take, and we need to start pushing and moving forward on these measures. But I do believe we're 10 minutes over time, Mr. Deacon.
I better move on. Can I just quickly, health costs are going to be included in the review? What about electricity?
Electricity is a different matter. Electricity is something that belongs to the regulatory authority, so it's not necessarily something that's going to be under the purview of the Cost of Living Commission. But electricity costs are something which are without question a challenge to what we're doing. I think that the Deputy Premier spoke about the way forward on energy, and I would strongly encourage you to have a discussion with him similar to this to inform Bernie's readers on where we are going on our energy policy. I would also strongly suggest you talk to the Minister of Education so you can dig into what he's doing with the strategic plan.
I have been trying to, so hopefully that will help.
Well, no problem.
It's the last question, and we are running over time, as the Premier pointed out. Now, you have talked about population.
Yes, I did. We were supposed to be here for 30 minutes.
You did say you'd give me extra time. So I was pushing it.
No problem.
There is one question I want to ask, because you touched on it a lot, and this is the issue of population growth, growing the economy, getting the number of people.
I thought you were going to work. I asked me about road safety.
I obviously haven't got time. Maybe I can ask that. Maybe that's the extra question I get in. Minister of Economic Development, Jamal Symons, he talked recently at the EY Global Reinsurance Outlook Forum. Exactly that. One of the major goals is to get Bermuda's population back to where it was in the boom years, 26, 27. When I interviewed Walden Brown in August for Bernie's, he didn't quite seem to be so keen on that. He said, we're not governed to benefit GDP, we're governed to benefit the people. What economic theory predicates on economic growth coming from more people? Mm-hmm. Where do you stand? Where's the government, where's the cabinet stand on this specifically? Because there is a little bit of discrepancy between views.
There may be different people who have different opinions, but I can tell you the opinion that matters most in the room, and that is mine. We will grow this economy, and the way we'll grow this economy is by having more people living and working in Bermuda. That is our job, that is our mission, and that is what we will execute.
How will he do it? And how will he do that and put Bermudians first?
Well, I think that when we talk in the broad context, if you want Bermudians to be first, what you have to make sure is you create additional opportunities for Bermudians to succeed. And I think that's part of the challenge that we have. We do not have enough opportunities for Bermudians here, and I think that's part of the challenge. So if we have more people living and working in Bermuda, that doesn't necessarily mean more expats living and working in Bermuda. That means more jobs located in Bermuda that will allow our people who are living overseas to come back to live and work inside of Bermuda.
That's not going to go back to the boom years of 2006, 2007.
You may think that.
I'm asking a question.
No, that's your opinion. My opinion. My thing is that you have to start somewhere. And in my view, you have to have the growth of the economy, more people living and working in Bermuda as your target and your focus, and design your policies around that.
Final question, because I know you're a busy man, and I am going to ask you about road safety.
Please
say there would be roadside breath tests this year. there doesn't seem to be any movement on that?
You said this year, I said in this parliamentary session, and I can assure you that this government will keep its promise, as was laid out in its throne speech, that we will have roadside sobriety testing in this parliamentary session.
So when you say we intend to enact this year, mm-hmm. you're not talking about the calendar year? That's an interpretation of it.
What I will say is that it was promised inside of our throne speech. Our throne speech is governs our entire parliamentary session, and it will happen in this parliamentary year.
So parliamentary year, because mm-hmm. you were quoted as saying enact this year.
When I'm speaking this year, if it was from our throne speech, I can tell you what was laid out inside of our throne speech. Our throne speech says
this is a motion to adjourn debate.
What I'm saying is that we will have roadside sobriety testing. We said that the items which are listed in our throne speech are things that we're committing to make sure that we enact this year. We've said that. There has been advanced work on that particular topic, and it will be random roadside sobriety testing, because I don't want us to get into the place and position where blacks are more criminalized than non-blacks.
That's always been an issue.
It has been an issue, and so we will do it right, we will do it correct, but we will do it in a way that will hopefully reduce the incidence and hopefully reduce the culture of drink driving in Bermuda.
All right, Premier, on that note, thank you very much for sparing us some extra time.
No problem.
And I hope you have a great Christmas.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.